Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. I'm Dan Peck in the studio, ESPN 106.7 HQ here on the Auburn Network campus. Drew at the controls, the capable one, making sure that the, you know, an underappreciated part of Drew's job that I have to do when Drew's not here is Drew is also in charge of the podcast being uploaded and with a description and on time and without commercials. I'm not good at doing that. I want to get out of here quickly, and so sometimes I will just upload it with commercials. But Drew does a great job making sure that the production is first rate on this show. Wanted to give Drew a little shout out there. Bill Cameron usually does this part of the show. Bill is at the viewing window for football practice. This is the day that the media gets a little glimpse, 20 to 30 minutes or so, of the Auburn football team. As they're about midway through spring practice, I believe tomorrow or Thursday is practice 7 of 14, A-Day scheduled for April 6th. So, I mean, Auburn is everything proceeding as we sort of expected. We'll see if there are any roster shakeups or anything. I would say a lot of that, I mean, I guess you could hear about a player deciding to move on during spring practice, but it sounds like a lot of it is everyone gives it, at least on the surface, everyone gives it their best shot, and then if anyone decides to move on, you know, the portal opens April 15th, and the roster movement can start for anyone who wants to switch teams before the start of the fall football season. Speaking of the portal, it opened in, amid all this bracket talk, the transfer portal in men's and women's college basketball opened yesterday with the reveal of the NCAA tournament field on Sunday night. Portal Monday was a day ago. There have already been a couple of needle moving acquisitions, transactions in the I don't know. We'll see. There's a lot. There are more headlines on that front. I know Alabama just picked up one of the top commitments earlier today. As we're already seeing some players, I thought that there would be, I thought some players might wait until more teams are out of it. I didn't know how much recruiting was going to happen immediately in the 24-40. I thought there'd be a lot of names going into the portal. I didn't know how many players we would see making decisions quite yet. But Houston Millett is the Pepperdine guard who had a 40+% season from three, averaged right around 15 points per game this year at Pepperdine. He was one of the top 10 players in the transfer portal, according to 24/7, and he picked Alabama earlier today. So you're seeing some movement in the transfer portal. I would expect Auburn to be, whenever the run ends, and it's the NCAA tournament, right? It could be over soon. It could be over six games from now with a national championship. All the possibilities are out there. When the season ends, I would expect Auburn, especially if Jahni Broome goes pro as expected, like Auburn's going to have some work to do with restocking this roster and keeping the front court at a championship level. And that's just, I mean, but that's the way of college basketball now, is that I think Bruce Pearl has shown that he is willing to go into the portal and find guys that fit his system. He finds them at, I mean, this roster is an excellent example of what he's capable of doing, because he can find junior college players. He can find non-Division I players like Chaney Johnson. I guess it's kind of cheating to call Chad a junior college player, because he was also a D1 player at Duquesne and at San Diego State before he ended up in Niceville, Florida, at Northwest Florida State University in Niceville. If you're unfamiliar, Northwest Florida State, where Chad Baker Mazzara played junior college, is the junior college very close to Niceville High School in Niceville, Florida. You may drive through Niceville. They've rerouted the interstate system, but I still say the best way to get to the beach, if you're going to Destin especially, Destin or Fort Walton Beach, I would say the way to get there is to drive through Crestview and Niceville and pop over the Mid Bay Bridge. However you get there, stop at Danny's Fried Chicken along the way and get yourself a snack. I believe there has been a pretty serious development since I was back in Niceville in October, in that Danny's has remodeled and the picture of my Little League team from the early 90s is no longer on the wall at Danny's Fried Chicken. I was able to snap that picture of it and send it to Drew and the folks here at work. Might become my new, since we're doing headshots soon, I might just let that be my new headshot, my the little outfielder picture of me from decades ago. But I digress. Chad Baker-Mazzara played at Northwest Florida State, but before he was at Northwest Florida State, he was a Division I player. But even guys, I mean, we asked Dylan about this a couple of weeks ago, and he raised an interesting point that I hadn't thought about. We talk about the number of players who started their career at the mid-major level on this Auburn team before coming to Auburn. Denver Jones and Jani Broome are the most obvious example of players like that, players who had, they started their career at the D1 level but maybe weren't totally thrilled about what their prospects were, or, they take what they can get coming out of high school. No disrespect to Florida International or Morehead State. I mean, Morehead State's a tournament team this year. But I imagine Jani Broome was thinking he was a major conference player coming out of high school. Denver Jones, for that matter, as well. With Alabama and Auburn in the state. Instead, they have to work their way from the mid. They have to prove themselves at the mid-major level, and then jump to the SEC, where they are now SEC tournament, part of the SEC tournament champion. It's a cool story. And Dylan made the point that you get to refine your skills at the mid-major level playing the kind of role Jani Broome played the first 2 years of his college basketball career, or the kind of role that the Denver Jones played. Like, you get to refine certain skills that you don't have to learn on the job in the SEC, and you get to come as a more finished product into the league. And that's not to say Jani was a finished product when he came to the league. There were parts of his game that were close to a finished product. But I think that the development of Jani Broome over the last 2 years is a reminder that it's not just as much as it is about recruiting the best players. And that's absolutely, it's so much of the job in major conference football and college basketball. That's so much of the work. But you gotta get the most out of the players you get. And Bruce Pearl has done an excellent job of helping players. I think on this team, the one that feels like the most drastic example is Jani, of helping someone reach potential. I'm not sure people thought they had when Jani signs with Auburn, when Jani announces in the portal that he's going to jump into the SEC and play at Auburn, I don't know if people thought Auburn was getting a future first-team all-conference, second or third-team all-American type of player. And that's what Jani has become. And it's not – I mean, the thought that you were getting an impact rim protector and a guy who was an aggressive offensive player around the rim and a quality rebounder, like, that was there. But the finesse parts of Jani's game that have evolved over the last – two seasons, the perimeter defense and the passing and the outside shot, like the things that he's willing to do now that were not at all an aspect of his game when he first started playing for Auburn after a couple of years in the Group of Five. Like, it's a remarkable thing. I'm hoping the season continues for this Auburn men's basketball team beyond just a game or two. In the NCAA tournament, they did draw, as we talked about a lot yesterday. I mean, you draw a potential matchup with UConn, the betting favorite to win the whole thing, UConn, and that sets up. There are a couple of Sweet 16 matchups that, if we get them, if chalk holds, Like, they could have been the national championship game in a different circumstance. That's how I feel about Houston Duke. Like, we could get Houston Duke in the Sweet 16, and that's a game that could have very easily been a Final Four or a national final. Tennessee Creighton could be a Sweet 16 game. It's like, those are two teams that have looked like bona fide Final Four contenders all year. Alabama North Carolina is a game that would, you know, that if both teams get there. I've seen a couple of the national writers who predict the whole bracket say that Alabama is a very real threat to the first couple of teams that they're going to face. They're not sure if Alabama can make a run, you know, to the Final Four, the national championship game or anything, but the thought of Alabama advancing beyond a Sweet 16 matchup with the number one team in the region, North Carolina, is on the table. I would absolutely put Auburn-UConn in that same sort of, I mean, that team, the winner of that game, UConn is the favorite right now. I would think that if Auburn is still standing, if Auburn's in the Elite Eight in this region, and they're one of the last teams, you know, if Auburn's one of the last eight teams in it, the only team I would think would have better odds than Auburn at that point, if they were still in it, would be Houston. Maybe Tennessee. Maybe if Tennessee is still there in the Elite Eight, they would have. But Auburn would be absolutely among. If you can advance past the UConn, the big UConn problem that Auburn may have in the Sweet 16. If they can get past UConn, I think that there is no ceiling to what this Auburn team could do in the NCAA tournament. It's just a matter of getting past a UConn team that was not. I mean, they were not challenged on their way to a national championship last season, won every single game of the tournament by 10-plus points. They brought back the core of that team, added some big-time freshmen as well, only lost three games this season, all of them away from home, all of them to tournament teams. It's a tall challenge for a UConn team that doesn't appear to have, aside from a lack of depth when you get into the second team. Those guys haven't, you know, UConn plays a, we talk about the style that Bruce Pearl plays with a team that gives max effort for 15 to 25 minutes per player, per game. That's not what UConn does. UConn leans on three or four guys who are going to play, you know, you look at the minutes in conference play, UConn's got guys averaging 32, 34 minutes per game. And not seeing the bench very often at all, and that's because they're among the best players at their position in all of college basketball. They have some depth behind them, but they don't want to. And they run a more deliberate, modest tempo system. So I don't think I got it right either time on that one, Drew. But they run a tempo with a more modest system. I was trying to do it with as few words as possible, but there you go. You know what I mean. UConn, you know, doesn't try to play with as many possessions. They can play fast, and when they do, it can be tough for teams. But in order to not overtax their starters, they don't play at that kind of intensity on both ends of the floor. So it's a yeah. I mean, I think that's. I mean, they're the UConn would be the favorite in any region. In this NCAA tournament, they happen to be in a region with a good two seed in Iowa State, Illinois, BYU, FAU, and San Diego State from last year's Final Four, both in the region as well, and the Auburn Tigers, who outside of the one line and maybe Tennessee, Auburn went into Selection Sunday as the favorite to win it all of everyone else. Like if you excuse the, and I think Auburn. I don't know, like you check the betting markets right now, I would think Auburn and North Carolina have fairly similar odds to make a run all the way. Carolina, they're on the one line. It's just, I mean, the big question is who's going to be standing when that region gets down to the Elite Eight. And I know it's, right now it feels like it's, yes, it's UConn or it's Auburn. There are teams that could impact that. San Diego State went all the way to the championship game last year. They'll be ready for Auburn in the round of 32 if both teams advance that far. FAU made it to the Final Four last year, brought back the core of that team and head coach Dusty May. They will give UConn a game in the round of 32, assuming both of those teams make it that far. So I mean, it's not, and there's UAB as well, who I think could absolutely, I mean, of the teams on the 11 line, 12 line, 13 line, they could get hot as well. But it's a, I don't know, it's an excellent time of year, especially if you've been following college basketball a lot, or even if you're just getting into it now and you're trying to catch up before a Thursday. And speaking of Thursday, we will be part of the, we're going on location on Thursday as part of the, you know, the on-air talent here on ESPN 106.7, the two local shows, Jacob and Uncle T-Bone going to be there from 2 to 4, and then we're going to do the drive from 4 to 6 at the Plaza in Midtown on Opelika Road. They're going to have games on the big screens. A couple of the 3 o'clock games will be going on while we're doing the show on Thursday. They've got an excellent menu. I've been talking up the cheeseburger, the War Burger, getting closer to trying that thing out. So looking forward to that. Thursday, we'll be on location at the Plaza. You're not going to want to miss that. So check out the drive and ESPN 106.7 on location this upcoming Thursday. Tell you what, we'll get to Yellowhammer when we come back. We'll take our first break. Bill Cameron will join us later in the show. He is watching football practice right now, and he will report back. Andy Burcham is traveling with the team right now. We will get with Andy Thursday, I believe. The thinking is that we're going to call Andy while we are at the Plaza and catch up with him live from Spokane the day before Auburn takes on Yale in the first round of the NCAA tournament. That game is Friday. Our shows are going to be a little bit, we're figuring out the times and things. I think the plan right now is for us to go live at 5 o'clock. And catch you up on the tail end of the basketball broadcast and give you some post game analysis as well. Hopefully Auburn is advancing to the round of 32. We'll see what happens on Friday. The NCAA tournament is upon us. Yellowhammer, we will get to you when we come back. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline presented by our friends at Skybar. You can text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast. We will talk with Jake Crane in hour number two. We'll catch up with the man from Crane and Company, but we will also take your phone calls as we wait for an update from Bill Cameron, who I think he might call in when the window gets done, might just pop over here into the studio. Yellowhammer, we will get to you when we come back. Stick around. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
Attention large property owners and
adventurers. 067 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. The Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. We'll hear from Bill Cameron a little bit later on in the show. Andy Burcham, who usually joins us on Tuesdays in hour number one, he's traveling to the Pacific Northwest with the men's basketball team right now. So we'll check in with Andy later in the week. In the meantime, love to hear from you, 334-321-1390, talking brackets, talking there's a baseball game tomorrow, Drew. Dodgers and the Padres are playing in Korea. This week before the official opening day next week, but the Dodgers trotting out a couple fancy new pieces that Dodgers roster will be on display in the next day or so. Let's get to Yellowhammer, who's on the line. What's up, Yellowhammer?
Hey, afternoons. I have orange and blue glasses, so I struggle to be objective, but I'm thinking that, and I'd like to see if you think I know what I'm talking about, but here's Auburn playing in the toughest basketball conference in the country, I would say. Nobody's that much better, I would think. And we've learned from playing all these different types of people, the different matchups and the different types of games we'll be in, physical games and other types of games. And so we also were shooting the ball better, and we play good defense. We've got all this depth, well coached. It seems to me that, I don't know what Vegas thinks, but if I was there, I'd put 50 on us being in the Final Four and 50 on us being in the final game, where you have as good a chance as anybody in the country. What do you think about that?
I think that Auburn is, you know, from a betting standpoint, I think Auburn is just about among the teams that aren't one seeds. Auburn's the favorite in this NCAA tournament. Like, if you were looking at, let me see if I can pull up the Final Four odds right now. So Auburn is 5-1 to win the region. If you're, I'm using FanDuel's numbers right now. Auburn's 5-1 plus 490, 5-1 to make the Final Four. UConn is about even odds if you want to bet UConn to get to the Final Four. Iowa State has slightly better odds than Auburn. Iowa State is plus 4.5-1. Auburn is about 5-1.
Does Vegas value UConn above everyone else?
UConn is the favorite to, let me see what I got here, champion, let me see if I have national champion odds at the moment. UConn is the favorite to win the national championship right now at plus 370, so about 4-1 to win the title. Houston is next at a plus 550. Purdue is 7-1. Arizona is 12-1. Carolina is 17-1. Tennessee is 17-1. Iowa State is 20-1. Auburn is 22-1 right now to win the national championship. Auburn's national title odds and their Final Four odds, for that matter, took a hit when they were put into UConn's region because the betting market thinks so highly of this UConn team. I think if Auburn were in, I don't want to say any other region because I think the betting market would still probably have Houston as a favorite over Auburn. In the Sweet 16, if there were a potential matchup there, but if Auburn were in the other two regions, if Auburn were a 4 or 5 in the region with Purdue as the one seed, or the region with North Carolina as the one seed, I think Auburn's national championship odds would be, I think Auburn would be closer to a top 3 or top 4 team in the betting market. But instead, because UConn is nearly 4-1 to win the whole thing right now. Actually, the odds are better than 4. It's 3.7 to win the whole thing. That really dents the chances of anyone else in that region as far as the odds go. So you can get a bargain. You can get a bargain on Iowa State right now, or you can get a bargain on Auburn right now because people think so highly of UConn. It's just a matter of, do you think they can get past a potential matchup with UConn in the Sweet 16? Because because that does seem to be. I don't see a situation where UConn is an underdog in a game in this tournament, and so the betting market kind of reflects that.
Could you talk about UConn in an Auburn matchup? What would we be struggling with? What would they be attacking us with? And what could we have to
UConn's,
deal with? All that kind of thing.
UConn's got everything. Like, it's a team without. I mean, I would compare them in many ways to the reigning national champion Florida Gators team from 16 or 17 years ago. I mean, it's tough to. I mean, they have big guards who shoot it well. They have big efficient posts who do everything you want a 7-foot center and a 6'10" power forward to do. They've got freshmen off the bench who contribute and could be NBA players or at least high level college starters someday soon. So it's just a matter of. It's a matter of Auburn, throwing a no hitter. You know, you got to go out there and you got to play as well as you can and hope that that you win your matchups enough and UConn misses enough shots that you got a chance to take it from them at the end.
Foul shots. How are we doing there? How are they doing there?
I don't know exactly. I think UConn's a pretty good free throw shooting team. I don't want to get that wrong with the numbers, but yeah, I think they're a and I know Auburn has had moments. I mean, there's. I guess Broom would be the question at the end of games if things are crucial. I mean, the thing about Auburn is that because they've only played they only won the one close game all season, that you haven't really had moments where Auburn is getting fouled and it's crucial that they hit these two free throws to hold off the other team. They were able to do it in the Mississippi State game in Nashville, but it hasn't really been a thing Auburn has been called upon to do very often this season because they haven't had a lot of games that were one possession game in the final minute, or a two possession game in the final minute. On the season, Auburn shot from the free throw line. Let me get the exact number for you. Auburn was 75% from the free throw line. Broom finished the season at 60%. I do wonder if teams would employ like a Hackage and I Broom type of strategy if he's on the court at the end of games. Dylan was under 60% as a free throw shooter this year, so that might be, I don't know, at the end of a tournament, the end of a close tournament game, that's going to be an important thing to track is how you how you shot free throws, and especially how you shot the kind of free throws that decide possessions at the end of games for UConn. Let me get UConn's numbers up there. I mean, we're still two rounds away from an Auburn UConn matchup. And, you know, important to keep that in mind. I mean, there's three teams in UConn's region, including a Final Four team from last year in FAU that has something to say about this. There's three teams in Auburn's region, including a Final Four team from last year, and UAB, who's playing very well and just blitzed through a tournament that not a lot of people thought they were going to win. There's quality basketball you need to play before we get to the Sweet 16 and a potential matchup between Auburn and UConn. As for your question about UConn, on the season, they're shooting right around the same point, 74-75% as well, and they've their starters who play the bulk of the minutes shoot it extremely well. They also have a center who's hovering in the 55-60% the big man, the 7'2" sophomore. But no, it's a they're the favorite. They're the favorite for a reason. And if the moment UConn is bounced from this thing, if UConn is bounced from this thing, the chances of everyone else seem to really go up, and the possibility that you could have. I mean, the thing becomes, as much as people like Houston, it feels like this thing becomes a lot more wide open if UConn exits the field.
Okay, well, thanks.
Appreciate it, Yellowhammer. Good stuff. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Bill Cameron, at some point, joins the show. He's taking in football practice right now on a beautiful day here in Auburn. A little cold last night and this morning. Got dipped under freezing. Hopefully everyone was all right there. But we are, mid-60s, no clouds, just a gorgeous day here in Auburn today. We will be back with more. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Stick around.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Bill will be joining us from football practice, checking out spring practice as we get closer to A-Day. A-Day also a Final Four Saturday this year, April 6th. So we'll see. Should be a very busy time in the world of sports, not just with the spring game here locally, but with a lot of other things going on around the country as well. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Auburn's Pro Day later this week. NFL draft stuff there on the screen as we get closer to the end of April, I think, the draft this year. Should be a high profile draft, quarterbacks and what have you, some familiar names, but true. All right, so a lot going on, and of course the NCAA tournament approaching as we get closer to the end of the week, that Thursday. I mean, we got play-in games tonight. From Dayton, I believe, is a Virginia, Colorado State, I think, is tonight. Then Boise, Colorado, is tomorrow. I hate, and we'll get to Ty the Tiger in just a second. I hate that 16 seeds have to play-in games. I feel like it robs the smaller conferences of an experience in the actual NCAA tournament. I feel like if you're an automatic qualifier, you should get a bid to the tournament. You should not be in a play-in game. I know that I'm worried that they're going to use the expansion of the tournament to further stick it to smaller conferences by making every 16 seed and every 15 seed and every 14 seed a play-in game, and they're going to whittle down the field from 76 to 64 that way and get rid of a lot of the potential Cinderellas and a lot of the potential a lot of the really obscure teams. I hope they don't do that. But there's 16 seeds tonight in action and 16 seeds tomorrow in action as well from Dayton. Auburn playing on Friday against the Yale Bulldogs. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Let's get to Ty the Tiger, who is on the line. What's up, Ty?
What's going on, man? I never thought about that. That's a good point about the 16 seeds. And
I hate it. I really do. And doing some mid-major college basketball these last couple of years has made me hate it even more. You know, seeing that the thought that a team could win their conference tournament and the season's over tonight in Dayton instead of giving them their real shot against a one seed or a two seed.
Exactly. And then, you know the teams that are playing in the 11th seed, the Virginia, the Colorado, they were the bubble team. They were just barely making it in. So
I have no problem with bubble teams playing.
That's what I'm saying is the bubble team should play on the bubble and play in.
That's
exactly right.
That's what today and tomorrow should be a chance for the last teams in and the last teams out to prove
right.
that they belonged. And I would love to see. I don't think it's going to happen because it would take more power conference teams on the bubble out of the tournament early. I would love to see 8 play-in games featuring all the teams at the edge of the bubble, the last teams in and the last 8 teams in, last 6, okay, make it a 76 team field. The last 16 teams in as at-larges play on Tuesday and Wednesday, right? 8 games. And that takes us, you know, that gets us down to that gets us down to a field that looks more like the tournament field.
So I called in to talk a little bit about Auburn, but first I just want to say that I think both committees really dropped the ball. And I don't know if y'all talked about the women's bracket. I haven't heard, but I think the committee on the women's bracket dropped the ball as well. If you look, you've got Iowa. And their third seed in their region is LSU. Okay, that would be a Elite Eight rematch of the national championship. Why would you not put LSU, who's got some power, who's got some fight in them, why would you not put them just in another region? So that way you could have whoever, Iowa, South Carolina, and LSU in the Final Four. It makes absolutely no sense. They talk about the women's bracket is going to be more watched if it gets to that point where Iowa's in the final, which I still don't believe. It is what it is. The women's Final Four, you know, might be watched a little bit, you know, more than normal, but it won't be watched more than the men's. But, I mean, hey, I'm going to – if Iowa and South Carolina are in the finals, I'll be watching that game. I just wish I could watch Iowa and LSU or absolutely LSU and South Carolina.
But I don't want – you know what? I get what you're saying, but I don't want the committee – to give a team a more favorable seed because they're full of celebrities, right? Like, I want you to get the seed you earned. And if LSU should be a 3 seed in this thing – now, I do understand making them, you know, if you think that –
make them a 3 seed in another bracket.
Yeah, you could have had them. No, you're right. And at the same time, though, I do wonder if the committee's thinking an Elite Eight matchup between Iowa and LSU could maybe set some viewership records for women's basketball Elite Eights. You know, they'll have the Final Four. They'll have the, you know, especially with some of the, I think, you know, Caitlin Clark, some of this hinges on Iowa going far. But there's also, I think, a lot of interest in how great the South Carolina program has become. The kid for USC is must watch if you get the chance. I mean, she's, you know, dropping 50 and hitting Steph Curry-esque 3 balls from just past the logo. Like there's some really some really high level basketball being played at the women's bracket. I get what you're saying though, but if chalk holds through a couple of these rounds, we could get some. I mean, LSU UCLA in the Sweet 16 could be a super matchup. I think there's some cool stuff. And there doesn't tend to be upsets in the women's bracket. It's very rare. I was reading that the 16, 15s, and 14s have won a combined 1 game in 20,
out of like 360 games.
Yeah, in 25, 26 years. I mean, it's not like the 13s and 12s win a ton either. It's just they win a little bit more than the teams that literally never do. But if we get once the first and second round are over, there could be some superpowers, you know, running into each other, both in the men's draw and the women's draw this year. It's a question of will Cinderella's pop up and sort of spoil this, and there usually is, you know, one or two, but we could get some huge matchups, including on the men's side, Auburn and UConn.
So I want to tell you a quick story. You're talking about the odds to win it all. I had a buddy at work from California. went to high school with somebody who plays for the Los Angeles Raiders. They flew out there very beginning of the season, went and watched a game. You know, everybody at work is like, all right, well, man, you know, throw $20 on black, you know, or, you know, this kind of thing. I handed the man a $50 bill, said, hey, put $50 on Auburn to win the national championship. I got those odds at plus 6,000. So I will have to be taking a trip out to Las Vegas if Auburn does end up running this table and winning this thing.
Yeah, so, I know somebody who got in at 45-1. It would have been midsummer, late summer. You know, whenever they, I don't know when they open those things, but it's usually shortly after the NBA draft, if I recall correctly, once they have a pretty good idea what these rosters look like. But I know, yeah, I know somebody not quite at 60, but I know somebody who's got a who's in on this at 45-1, and they'll be watching.
Well, they got it at Caesars. Yeah. This guy got it at Caesars second week of football season at plus 6,000.
Nice.
So I've got that ticket and just waiting to go cash it, baby. You know, that being said, you know, I like all of our matchups. To me, if UConn is the favorite and they're going to repeat and they're the hands down only, I mean, you know, I felt like UConn and Houston were the two favorites until Iowa State did what they did to Houston on Saturday. Before that, I feel like everybody was kind of leaning either Houston or UConn, and I feel like a lot swayed to UConn after what happened to Houston. But before that,
I have this crazy feeling A&M's going to give Houston a really good game. I think A&M in Memphis could give Houston because A&M's not going to be fazed by a lot of what Houston does. A&M's been facing down the bed. I mean, they just beat Kentucky last week. Like, I don't think you're going to overwhelm A&M's team, and that's a coach. I don't know.
And Houston is beatable. I mean, we saw, I know it's not the same team, but it's the same nucleus from last year. And I mean,
I don't trust Purdue at all, but if you told me a one seed was out in the first two rounds of this thing, I would think that A&M beat Houston. Like, that would be my. Mississippi State and North Carolina could be a street fight too.
Man, I like Mississippi State, and I'm all SEC for this thing. But I like Tom Izzo in the tournament. Does some crazy things, man.
I don't trust. I know what you mean. No, Izzo's the only thing about that team I trust. You know what I mean?
That's it. And that's why you can't count them out. I mean, because they have Izzo. But
I think State's got the horses to beat Michigan State just to make that game really ugly and low scoring, but beat them. But I think North Carolina's the kind of team that maybe runs past them. So it's sort of like, you know what I mean? Like, I think maybe it's going to be, you know, it's just too much offense for what State does. A&M Houston, and for that matter, FAU UConn are games that.
I mean, we could be talking about playing FAU.
I know.
You never know.
I know. I mean, I would not have.
You never know.
Yeah, FAU is not your run of the mill 8-9. Like, they're much better than that. They went. I mean, it wasn't a. Now, people will tell you, especially Memphis people, if you ever talk to them about this, they'll tell you that FAU should have lost in the first round last year. That a blown call in the Memphis game allowed FAU to make this entire run when it was.
It's always like that. I had to remind somebody the other day when we were talking about our 19 run. Because, you know, we beat everybody.
Chris Jans? Is this Chris Jans and New Mexico State?
I told him, I said, dude, yeah. New Mexico State had the ball and got a shot off.
Oh, it looked good. It looked good when he left his hand. It looked like they just hit a corner three to beat us. Now it hits the side of the backboard. It's not always that simple. But
what I was getting at is I'd much rather see UConn in the Sweet 16. I really rather see him in the Elite Eight after a game because you got some time to prepare. But I'd much rather see him in the Sweet 16 than in the Final Four. But I mean, if we're gonna win a tournament, you're gonna have to beat UConn or you're gonna have to beat Houston. I mean, you're gonna have to beat these teams. But I will tell you, man, I like our kids. I like our focus. I mean, it just seems like a lot different than these past years with Jabari Smith. And people like that, like, you know, like that year, I just felt like we weren't jiving. We weren't playing good ball. And I feel like this year, I mean, other than the Florida game, I mean, I can't, you know, the Florida game, and then it's like that game and the Kentucky game are the only two games I can really think about us laying an egg and just not showing up ready to play. And even in the Kentucky game, we kept fighting. I mean, when the I ain't gonna talk about the refs, but when the refs are doing that, you only lose by like 10 or 12. I mean, it is what it is.
No, the intensity and the confidence and the way the 3-point shot has come along over the last couple of weeks, like it is reminiscent of 2019 more than any team that Auburn's had since that 2019 Final Four squad. Even teams that won the regular season conference title. It's a question of, can you keep that going? Because in the NCAA tournament, you know, we see teams that are playing at a high level with a lot of confidence, and then, you know, they're wondering what happened after a game or two. So it's just a matter of,
right,
you know, figure out how to get to that second weekend, and then if it's UConn, then go give UConn your best shot.
So be it.
Yeah.
So be
go give them your best shot. Maybe and maybe there's a new favorite after the game's over.
And so and here's my thing. I like our team, but we've got to have consistent guard play. We've had it in the SEC tournament. We had shooters hitting shots. We relied on our inside game and our rebounding and our defense. I mean, man, that defensive, what a defensive performance against Florida. I mean, that if we play defense like that, I don't care. UConn, you had to put the 96 Bulls up there to beat Auburn. I mean, we played defense from start all the way to finish, and if we do that, it's going to be hard to beat us no matter who you are. I just think if we have that consistent guard play, basically like we did in 19, where we can hit a couple threes when needed, Denver Jones, I think, is going to become a star. I know he's already a star. I think he's going to become a superstar this tournament. He's going to become a name that not only Auburn fans know, but all of the nation knows because of what he's going to do. I got faith in the kid. And I just love watching Baker Mazar and just his whole he reminds me of Ron Artest, okay? He might not score you but 10, but he's going to be in everybody's grill. He's going to be he's guarding everybody on the floor. I mean, he's just high energy the whole time. I mean, that kid to me has come along and like came out of nowhere, because I knew about Denver Jones coming, knew about Aiden Holloway, and I was like, who is this Chad Maker Mazar kid? Is he going to be good? You know, and he didn't start, so it was kind of you had to feel him out and see what he plays like. But you watch him. He is our most consistent player on offense. I mean, he's 10 points a game, 5 rebounds, and 3 or 4 turnovers every single game, and impacts that game more than anybody else on the floor besides Jumbotron, man, when he gets out.
So I know somebody.
Man, I'm gonna miss him, dude.
I know somebody who saw Sean Marion at UNLV like 25 years ago, and they said that there's elements of Baker Mazar's energy. It's a different kind of energy, but the way he can impact the game. But you know, by being able to go 1 through 5 basically as a, you know, defensively, and then help out as much as he can offensively. Ty, we got to take a break. Great stuff. Appreciate the phone call, and yeah, we're looking forward to seeing how things go later this week. I think we got Bill Cameron online. We had some callers hanging on. Call us back if you get the chance. We had Jeff and Mark, I think we had as well. Appreciate it. But we'll get to Bill Cameron when we come back. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
At The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back to The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Bill will be joining us shortly. We're about to end hour number one, so we will save Bill Cameron for hour number two if he's able to join us on the phone. Might be here in the studio before then. We will see what happens. But in the meantime, is he walking in right now? Okay, so yeah, we'll have Bill Cameron joining us for hour number two. Maybe joining us before we go to break with hour number one. We'll see as we are looking forward to the start of the NCAA tournament. We'll be at the Plaza on Thursday for a live broadcast. On the Line, we'll be there from 2 to 4. We'll be there from 4 to 6. Come hang out, say hi as we take in one of the great sports days of the year on Thursday, the first full day of the NCAA tournament. Some action tonight. Got a 16 seeds battling. You've got a game featuring a couple of bubble teams, Virginia and Colorado State. We'll have more to talk about with Jake Crane in hour number two, taking your phone calls as well, and Bill Cameron with a report from the practice field as he got to see some of Auburn's football team in action earlier today. We'll be back with hour number two of The Drive. Stick around.
This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is hour number two of The Drive. I guess it's hour number two. It feels like hour number one.
Hey, Bill.
Oh, I just got here. No, hey, hello, everybody.
See you guys. I'm out of here.
Yeah, okay.
Trade off.
That's all right. That's all right. There's plenty of audio and stuff that we can
do. No, and you know what?
I
miss too much time during basketball season. I missed you guys. I'm happy to be back for, you know, I shouldn't miss too many more shows with basketball season, although there is the possibility.
Yeah, well, you hope you miss a few more now.
I'd be okay with it, yeah.
I did hear.
You see the bracket? You got to fill out your WNIT bracket for the.
I haven't filled it out, but I did hear the Troy AD on with Doug earlier today saying they have put a bid in and expect it or would like it to be Monday night.
That's right. They're looking for which might mean we may need to shake up the Greystone draft a little bit if I got a game going on.
If I got a game going on while the draft's going on. There's no telling when we're going to be able to get that.
Might need to push to Tuesday or Wednesday. The Trojans found out last night they will face the winner of FIU and Stetson.
Yep.
Those teams are going to play Thursday. One of four. How about this, Bill? Four Sun Belt teams in the draw, and because the WNIT really emphasizes geography early on, if all four Sun Belt teams advance to the round of 16, you will have two Sun Belt versus Sun Belt matchups in the round of 16.
Wow, that's
in the WNIT. That's... If Troy and ODU both got a bye, you remember ODU from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Troy and ODU both got a bye. If they both win one game, it's Troy ODU in the round of 16 in the WNIT.
Wow.
Troy and ODU are just one win away from playing each other. There's a history there these last couple of seasons between those two teams. Southern Miss is going to play UAB. If they win that one, they could set up a rematch with ULM as another Sun Belt versus Sun Belt thing. So yeah, Trojan's going to try to host, and would really hope that folks come out in big numbers and check out Trojan Arena if indeed the Trojans get to host that one. Although look, if FIU wins and the WNIT says we need to go down to Miami, Bill. I mean, there's worse places. To
yeah,
be sent.
You're right.
There's worse sentences out there than a trip.
That's
to,
true. But I've got a feeling. You'll be calling a game from Troy.
I think so. Yeah. I think so as well. And I think FIU will. I think FIU is not looking to host too many games in a row in this thing. They might want to. We'll see. But FIU and Stetson will be the matchup to decide Troy's opponent.
All right. So hour number two just getting underway here. I was over at the athletic complex, the football complex, where Auburn with practice number seven. So there. Just think about this. Their next practice will be the midpoint. I mean, 15 practices, and they're almost halfway done. We had a chance. Boy, we had all kinds of opportunities today. Bruce Pearl and Johnny Harris this morning, Hugh Freeze early this afternoon, and then practice. And I can talk a little bit about all of those. We'd love to hear from you, though, here in the second hour of the show, which is, as usual, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. You can call us on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. It was encouraging. I went to call in as I was leaving the complex, and it said, user busy. So a lot of phone calls there early. We'd love for you to join in. Give us a call on that Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840. The Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast. You missed any of hour number one, check out the podcast. Yeah, I had a couple of interesting phone calls, some cool conversations there with our buddy Ty the Tiger, among others, calling in hour number one. Bill, you came in from practice and had sort of an interesting note. I don't know what you're...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how significant it is, but I mean...
You could raise an eyebrow or
the,
two.
The first things we got to see, and I left before the viewing window was up so I could be back here for hour number two, but they were in shells, and they were working on some different passing situations, doing some scramble drills where the quarterback would go back and then have to, move and then find receivers and hit them. But the first receiver up in every drill that we saw while I was out there today was Cam Coleman. So, I mean, he was mentioned today by Hugh Freeze. I asked him about some of the newcomers that had stepped up, and he listed quite a few players on offense. He said, obviously, Cam Coleman. I mean, it's almost like it's understood that he is going to play. He doesn't practice like a freshman. He doesn't look like a freshman. And you asked me a little while ago, would I be shocked if he were Auburn's leading receiver this year? Absolutely not. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I'm trying to think the last time that a true freshman had a really productive season at receiver for Auburn and what kind of numbers we were looking at with that. I do wonder like what the freshman records are for things that can, because I'm
trying to think of a freshman that has been prolific as a receiver at Auburn. I don't really recall anybody. It just doesn't come to mind. Guys have usually been here for a year or two before they are the primary target.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of. I mean, there have been guys who had had glimpses and stuff, but it would be I think it would be a new development. For a true freshman receiver to be able to there was I guess Kobe Hudson redshirted. I mean, had that productive freshman year, but I think maybe there'd been a redshirt on him at the before that. So I mean, it would be something. But Auburn also doesn't sign receivers like Cam Coleman.
They haven't
and Perry Thompson in recent
often.
Seasons. Yeah.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. So yeah, that was. I mean. Peyton Thorne was the number one guy. It appeared that Hank Thompson and Holden Gurner alternating as the number two quarterback just when they were in order throwing. So we can talk more about that. Again, love to hear from you. Do we want to give some of these away today?
What are those for?
We have some tickets to the Auburn-Arkansas baseball opener on Thursday.
You want to throw a pair out to the next person who wants
Let's
them?
Let's do that. Yeah. Next person that wants a pair of tickets to the Auburn, Arkansas opener, 6 o'clock Thursday night over at Plainsman Park.
Number one team in the country, right?
Yeah, that is absolutely right. They are yours. 334-321-1390. We'll get to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar, and Jerry gets us started. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I appreciate the tickets, but I'm not going to be able to make it.
Oh, that's fine. No, we just the next person
Jerry,
that we talk to that wants them.
Jerry
you don't
waves.
Have to take
Jerry
them.
Waves his right to the
that's
tickets.
Right.
They are still available to the next caller.
Jerry was online before we offered the tickets anyway. So
magnanimous move by Jerry.
Hey, glad to hear you, Bill. I feel confident that our basketball team is going to go pretty deep into the tournament. I'd put a little money on winning it all. I think they're that good.
I think Auburn can play with anybody, and they have the capability of beating anybody. They as the rest of the teams there in the East, are just the first thing. The most important thing is to obviously to win and get to the win this weekend, get to the Sweet 16. Getting out of this region would be huge for whoever does it. And I thought it was interesting earlier today, Bruce was asked about the fact that he had not mentioned the SEC tournament, and he said, no, we don't have time for that. And he pointed out how big a deal it is to win, though, and how much he had congratulated Tennessee and said, and look at what's happened to Tennessee since they clinched the SEC. They are 0-2. They lost at home to Kentucky, and then they got knocked out in the first round. So the thing right now is to you're going to have to put off the thoughts of what just happened, because what is next is the most important thing, because you lose here and you're done.
Mentioned it in the first hour. Auburn is right around 22-1 to win the national championship, depending on where you where you're looking for. Those odds took a bit of a hit after Auburn was put in the same region as UConn. Auburn was closer to the top four, top five.
As a matter of fact, before the bracket was released,
they had grown to 15-1.
That's exactly what I saw, 15-1.
Yeah, can't wait to watch the Auburn Connecticut game.
Well, got to win a couple first. Got to win a couple first. Don't look ahead.
Yeah, we had a caller in hour number one who wanted me to sort of break down the Auburn Connecticut game, and I was happy to do it. But I did want to caution there are teams in both pods that will have something to say about Auburn and Connecticut playing in the Sweet 16, including a couple of teams that made the Final Four last year. UConn's got FAU potentially in the round of 32. Auburn's got San Diego State potentially in the round of 32.
Going to be an interesting tournament.
Love it. Absolutely.
One thing I wanted to know is, were there any recruits at the
practice today? Yeah, I saw at least a half dozen that were there. I mean, Hugh Freeze was asked, Brian Matthews asked him just sort of how the past weekend went, and he said he thought it went just absolutely great with all the players that Auburn had in, but Hugh offered up the fact that, yes, there would be more recruits in today, Thursday, and Saturday when they scrimmage again on Saturday. Not as many maybe as last week, but he really feels that recruiting is going extremely well with prospects for the 25 class.
Great. Saturday's going to be a big day.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
All right.
Appreciate it, Jerry. 334-321-1390. And Michael is next. Hey, Michael.
Hey, guys. I don't know if you could count him as a freshman, but Ronnie Daniels comes to mind for me. And I think he's, with size-wise and the way he played, and I know Cam hasn't played yet, but it reminds me a lot of Ronnie Daniels.
Yeah, Ronnie, of course, had played a little pro ball, and you may be right. I'd forgotten about the fact that, he was an older freshman when he came to Auburn after having played pro baseball for a few years. I think he was 21, 22 as a freshman, but you're right. He was physically mature, and that's something you see in Cam Coleman. He doesn't look like an 18. Well, I don't even know if he's 18 yet, or maybe he just turned 18.
It was pointed out to me Seth Williams caught 26 passes in 2018.
Did he lead the team?
As a true freshman, which was, I want to say he...
That's pretty good. I mean, see, but that gives you an idea.
Yeah.
I think Cam Coleman is capable of doubling those.
All right, freshman receivers all time. Seth Williams finished second in touchdowns scored with 5, third in receiving yards with 534, fourth in catches made with 26.
Yeah, I think what's the all time number?
I'm trying to find that. I could find Seth's record and where he stood in some of those all time.
I would think Ronnie would be up there though.
That's a great point. Yeah.
So I unfortunately can't go Thursday night, guys. I appreciate the opportunity for the tickets, but I will definitely be listening to y'all for opportunities throughout the year. But
hey, Michael, appreciate it. Thanks a lot for mentioning Ronnie. It's funny. I mean, as a matter of fact,
Eli Stove caught 20 plus passes as a true freshman.
20
as well.
Plus, but I mean, now that you play 12 games, I would think it would almost be disappointing if someone like this, because all right. Hugh Freeze was asked today because he was talking about first he started talking about his offense in one of the early questions.
I think Schwartz also had a pretty productive season that year as a true freshman.
But he was talking about 55-45, the percentage of run to pass, and he said, he'd like to get it to what his teams usually did. He'd like to have a 3,000-yard passer, and it was immediately brought up to him, Auburn's only had 2 3,000-yard passers, and he went, well, when we get the kind of talent that we need to run our system, that shouldn't be that hard to do. And that may seem rather flippant or something, but that's 250 yards a game, which is not mind-blowing, you know, unbelievable. Auburn has really put up passing-wise. Auburn's near the bottom of the SEC in passing, you know, numbers for season and for career. And that's where, I mean, if Cam Coleman is Auburn's leading, I would expect Auburn's leading receiver this year to pull in at least 50 passes and have double-digit touchdowns.
I mean, Chad Kelly had a 4,000-yard season playing for Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss. Bo Wallace had a 3,000-plus-yard season as a passer. Bo Wallace actually had two 3,000-plus-yard seasons as a passer. And I think the last year, as Bo Wallace very nearly had three seasons as a 3,000-yard as a 3,000-yard passer for Hugh Freeze. I mean, yeah, I would think that he doesn't feel like those numbers are untouchable, based not just based on what he did this past season or what he did at Liberty, but because his Ole Miss teams in an era where it was less offensively focused than it is now, where they were able to do things like that.
Ronnie Daniels, as a freshman in 1999, caught 56 passes for 1,068 yards and 9 touchdowns. Felt like most of those came against Georgia, but I mean that was a fabulous year. And just because I remember him as being someone who was older, that's a great point. Thanks, Michael, for pointing that out.
Did one of the Tuberville freshmen have a big like 0-2 season? Did one of those guys make? I would think that maybe a big season in that regard would just be Devin. Okay, Devin caught 18 passes in 0-2, that would have been his true freshman season.
Yes, Devin, Ben, and
Devin had 18 for 304 as a true freshman in 0-2.
Devin was a deep threat who was a little inconsistent catching all the passes.
Ben had 17 for 224 that year. So it's two freshmen, but not overwhelming numbers by any stretch. And I mean, yeah, I mean it's on brand with some of the other stuff we were talking about.
All right, we'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Jake Crane joining us at the bottom of the hour. I'd love for you to join in. In the meantime, 334-321-1390 here on The Drive.
Yellowwood knows that a five-star back.
ESPN 106.7 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew here at the controls. Yeah, Dan was talking about it a while ago. Don't forget, and I need to text Doug. Doug Amos called me a little while ago, and Doug's planning on coming over if he gets a chance to the Plaza Bar on Thursday. Just sort of hang out with us a little bit.
Oh, very cool. So, yeah. I think we're also going to give Andy Burcham a call on Thursday.
Yeah,
I
saw that. So. Yeah, I knew Andy was in the air today. That sounds like a Phil Collins song. No, it's so he wouldn't be able to be on with us today. So I was trying to figure what would be the best time. So that's great. We'll have him on while we're watching ball games and we're there at the Plaza Bar.
I did see you drown Andy that one time, right? So there's that's a Phil Collins. That's a deep sort of in the air tonight. You got a Phil Collins? Are you a Phil Collins guy?
I like Phil Collins. I got a little tired of him there in the 80s.
It gets a little cutesy, doesn't it?
I mean, really, it just
gets a little cutesy.
Enough. I know he's really talented.
Oh, he's super talented
really
guy. Oh,
I mean,
man.
No
Jacket Required?
Genesis.
It's a good record.
And, I mean, you know, Genesis and single, solo, just fine. So, we'll do that on Thursday. We'll be at the Plaza Bar and Lounge, as will Jacob and Uncle T-Bone, as they'll be getting going 2 to 4, and we'll be in following them on the first full day of the tourney. As you mentioned, there's some games on tap tonight. And, this is great. Once Thursday gets here, it is great. Just wall-to-wall basketball.
It feels like a year where, especially at – and it's always a surprise when a 1 gets bounced early or a 2 gets bounced early. This feels like a real – like if there's – if one of the ones or one of the twos isn't in the Sweet 16, like it'll be just crushing for these teams that feel like they have a chance at the time, especially at the top of the bracket. The ones, I mean, all four of these one seeds, I mean, we're talking about games. Yes, North Carolina might have to get through Mississippi State
right.
to get to the Sweet 16. Houston may have to get through A&M. And UConn has FAU potentially. I know there are people who like as a Utah State. I think could be the could be one of the two matchups for Purdue in the fourth region. So I mean, there are it's not easy for anyone but to get there. But yeah, it could be a could be a real mess if someone slips up and you know, Auburn
it's
looking
always to, it's always a mess.
It always is.
At least my bracket always is. So. Have you filled yours out yet?
I have. I usually fill mine out the night of Selection Sunday and then tinker with it rather than waiting and digesting all the information and sort of like my big thing is I kind of think UConn's going to win it all, but if you told me UConn wasn't the national champion, I have three or four teams that I would be deciding between. Auburn is one of them. Like if you guaranteed me right now, if you told me nothing about the tournament, except that UConn does not repeat as national champion, it's somewhere along the line UConn's going to lose. It throws. I mean, it would have me sort of wondering. You know, when's that going to happen? Who's going to win instead? But with UConn in the field, it does. It's just. I understand why someone would take a handful of teams over them. But I think UConn's going to
If you're taking just one team,
UConn's going to be a pretty solid favorite over anybody they face the rest mm-hmm. of the way. Doesn't mean they can't lose.
Lost
a handful of games the regular season this year. Away from home, teams didn't play some of the top teams in this field.
They don't go that far away from home until they get to the Final Four.
That's true. It'll be a pro UConn crowd in Boston if things get that far.
And Bruce Pearl today was he sort of cut it before somebody could really get into him talking about the seeding and everything. He said he's okay. He's okay with the bracket. He said he's fine with it. The one thing that he was very adamant about is something needs to be done about placing teams in pods this far from home when that was supposed to be the reasoning for creating these pods in the regions. Yes, there could be a pod. He said what the NCAA should do. And he said, I'm not just going to complain. I'll give a suggestion. He said the NCAA should look at the numbers. Where are the teams coming from that are in the NCAA tournament? And if a large number of them are coming from the South or from the West or from the Northeast or wherever, but where large numbers of teams, if there is a majority of teams coming from one area, there need to be more pods in that area.
It seems like at the moment they're still sort of dividing it up regionally, right? This year, I was talking about it with Scott Bagwell earlier today. This year's
yes, they are, but there aren't teams that fit into those regions. As well,
no, but if you look, there are two cities in this first weekend that would sort of fit the description of the West. There are two cities that would sort of fit the description of the South. Two yep. that would fit the description of the East, and two that would fit the description of the Midwest. And that's which although they're not exclusive hosts, right? Like it's not as though Memphis and Charlotte are the two places where everyone in the South region.
No.
is playing and they're going. It's not that clean, but it does seem to be that plays some role in deciding. And I don't know a solution other than like Bruce was saying, but if these sites are set years in advance, which is to rent these arenas,
right.
It feels like they're. I mean, I believe next year's eight sites are already sort of set in stone. As far as where they will host the first two rounds and where they'll host the next two rounds, I get what Bruce is saying, and it's a shame that there were two southeastern cities in these eight that where you could have sent teams, and you have in Memphis you've got Houston as a one seed and their pod, and you've got Baylor as a three seed and their pod.
Yeah, you have eight SEC teams. In the tournament,
you have eight SEC teams, yes, but you're giving preferential treatment.
I know
to the
you
teams
are.
At the top of the pods. If Auburn had been, I think that if Auburn had gotten their way to the two line, they would have gotten the Memphis spot instead of Baylor. Like that would have been because Houston as a one seed was going to get to play the first round in the region closest to Houston, which in this case is Memphis, and the next round in the region closest to Houston, which is Dallas. It's sort of who else is going to get. Tennessee's in Charlotte, because Tennessee is, or maybe Tennessee's in
Tennessee. Yeah. I think they are in Charlotte.
Tennessee's in Charlotte. I think Kentucky is going to Brooklyn. I think Duke's going to Brooklyn. Like even some of the teams in the top 16.
Yeah, they both recruited a lot of players from New York. So
right,
that's not terrible.
But even those programs aren't staying. Sort of close to home. Yeah, close to home.
But I mean, Auburn would have liked it if they could have stayed. Within 1,500 miles, maybe, as opposed to 2,500 miles.
Nope, it's Spokane though. Yeah, Spokane.
Auburn's the highest seed in that group.
They are, yes. That's the it was the last spot on the board.
Like, well, the leftovers get thrown there.
Yeah, it's the
Auburn and Alabama are the two highest seeds in Spokane.
And that was the issue was going to be, especially in a year where you don't have a very high West Coast seed.
Yep,
you were going to have to figure out what to do with the Salt Lake City Regional and the Spokane Regional. Arizona made sense in Salt Lake City. It was a question of who was the other team who was going to be the other high seed kind of stuck in Salt Lake City. That would have been an alternative to send Baylor. You could have sent Baylor to Salt Lake City instead of Wake, from Waco, and then allowed.
Yeah, and that's what could
and allow
the
Southeastern. Yeah,
that is what very well could be ahead for whoever comes out of the East. If it's UConn, then they're fortunate they've been able to play and they've been rewarded by being able to play in Brooklyn and Boston. And their reward for that then would be, let's go to Phoenix and probably play the University of Arizona.
Could be Arizona, could be.
Because East and West will meet in the first or one of the two Final Four games.
Right. And even if you move Baylor to Salt Lake City and open up a spot in Memphis for a new pod, I'm not sure Auburn gets that call because Kentucky's ahead
right,
of Auburn.
Kentucky's a three.
And there would have been, I guess you got. You have
that
a
would have been it because, yeah. I mean, this, according to the committee, remember, Auburn was 15 and Alabama was 16.
Then you've also got Duke, who could have been. Duke could have slid into Memphis as well instead of Brooklyn.
But
so,
anyway, I mean, yeah. that was Bruce's biggest complaint.
It's an interesting point. How would you feel about the tournament? Now, they won't do this because of the money. How would you feel about the men's tournament doing what the women's tournament does and allowing the teams seeded 1 through 16 to host the first two rounds of the tournament? That's the thing the women's do. They do that in part to cut down on the
expenses,
and also the you tend to provide larger crowds.
Sure, absolutely.
You keep the games closer to home rather than moving
that
them
would
to
be,
strange sites.
That wouldn't be nearly as much fun.
In the men's tournament,
you wouldn't have some of the upsets that we've seen. I mean, it'd be a lot of fun when you're hosting, but I mean, just overall.
Well, it depends on how you disperse. Right. It depends on how you disperse tickets too, right? Like, are you given? Is it 50-50? For the host team and the
Probably end up being like I don't know. I mean,
do you treat it like a neutral site game?
The home site's always going to get more tickets.
I mean, it's just not feasible to name the sites on Selection Sunday. Like, I think that would be it'd be really it'd be really cool if you did that.
No, but I mean, the thing is, you could do it months out when you've got a pretty good idea. Boy, this is a good year in this area or another area.
What would be great if you could do this financially, Bill, would be to have like 16 sites and then choose the 8 on Selection Sunday along with the, like, sort of corresponding with who the top seeds are.
Yeah, that would
so you've got, and I don't, and well, I don't
there's
know.
A thought. Pass that along. Well, pass that along to Bruce.
Well, no, and I wonder, would you give the other 8 to the women's tournament maybe, or would you hold the, I don't know how you would need to pay some sort of fee, but maybe having a larger pool of potential cities and then whittling it down to 8 when you announce the.
I think that might be doable. I know we need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us when we come back. So stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
390, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls, and we'll head to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in Jake Crane of Crane & Company. Jake, how you doing today, man?
Doing great. Wish we weren't in the East region, but other than that, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, it's hard to for us to get away from that here. I mean, that's everybody's been wondering what the heck's going on. I'm sure UConn, Iowa State, Illinois are among the teams that are wondering what the heck's up with that region as well.
Yeah, well, if I'm UConn, I'm the most upset out of the group. I mean, how are we the number one overall seed? And you put us in the toughest region with four teams that just won their conference tournament and two teams that made the Final Four last year. Here's the problem, Bill. We got too many lawyers and math teachers making decisions about who makes the postseason in college sports. I'm sick of these athletic directors. I'm sick of these people that aren't as dug into the sport. There's so many other people, whether it be the College Football Playoff Committee, the NCAA Basketball Selection Committee. I don't go down and ask a baker to make me a steward or to handle my 401k. I don't understand why we do this. But having said all that, I will say, I mean, if you're Auburn at this point, I mean, you've got to be unbelievably confident. If there's a team that is built to beat UConn, it is without a doubt Auburn right now. I mean, you look at the depth, you look at the physicality, the way that Auburn can win in multiple ways, and the way they just suffocate you defensively. You know, I think there are some similarities to these teams. But you got to take care of business first with Yale, then whoever you get out of UAB and San Diego State, which to me, Bill, I would rather play San Diego State than UAB with the way it's going around. I've watched San Diego State a lot this year. Ledee's a good player. Trammell's a good player. They made the Final Four last year. But I do not want to see UAB in that second round because they're going to be playing, you know, you have nothing to lose. I mean, Eric Gaines is a really good player. Vasquez is, you know, hotter than Sidney Sweeney standing next to an active volcano right now. So, look, Auburn, we had to beat Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky to be able to make the Final Four last time. I mean, at this point, just it doesn't matter. They're in our region the way I see it.
Yeah, look at San Diego State. I mean, that's a team people aren't really talking about as opposed to some of the other teams in the region. But they snuck up on folks last year too. Like they weren't supposed to be in the national championship game a season ago. And as tempting as it is to look ahead, because we do have in this region, and I get some qualms about one region, Auburn's region in this case being overloaded compared to the others. I get the issues about some of the decisions that were made on the bubble. Some of the rankings and the 1 through 68 were puzzling to say the least.
Yeah, I don't think it was math teachers. Guys,
I would hope not.
Maybe they were science teachers because they apparently the net means nothing except it's right inside of the rim on the actual court. I don't want to hear another word about the net or any of that stuff going forward. I mean, I'm looking at who Bama's playing. They're playing on a Friday. I mean, you give them College of Charleston and then possibly Grand Canyon or St. Mary's. Meanwhile, we got to play the Globetrotters and then the Dream Team and then the Monstars. It's absolutely ridiculous.
I do like this Grand Canyon team. I don't know. I'm not crazy about the St. Mary's and Bama draw for them, but I do like Grand Canyon as one of the better 12 or worse seeds in the
But too many people are picking that one.
Yeah.
See, those 12-5s, that's not how it works. It's the ones nobody's talking about. It's the UAB San Diego State. I mean, everybody is so high on McNeese to beat Gonzaga. They're super high on James Madison to beat Wisconsin. The problem is, the whole week, these 5 seeds are hearing that too. One of the reasons the 12s are able to win is because they sneak up on people. And outside of UAB, I mean, nobody's sneaking up on anybody.
Yeah, I think that the upsets on the 11 and 12 line, it does feel weird how there are games that everybody is in on. I believe New Mexico is currently favored over Clemson, despite New Mexico being the 11 seed and Clemson being the 6. I think Oregon will probably be favored over South Carolina in the 11-6 game when that game tips off. But you're right, at the 12 line, it feels like there's really trendy ones, James Madison and McNeese, and then there are ones that would be slightly more surprising if they were pulled off. That's the other two 5-12s on the board.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking like which 14 seed's going to do it? Is it Akron? Like, I just keep looking at Akron. I mean, they got the leading rebounder in the country. They're unbelievably athletic, but Creighton's got everything, too. I mean, Baylor Shireman's nice. Kalkbrenner's the monster down low. You know, Trey Alexander's the guy that's obviously was committed to Auburn that's playing really well. So I'm wondering, you know, this year, will we get the amount of craziness
that we've come to expect, that we got during the regular season, that obviously we got during the conference tournament. So at this point, I'm expecting, you know, mass chaos. But, look, it's going to be fun either way.
If you told me a 14 seed was in the round of 32, I would guess Moorhead.
I'll tell you what, man, Illinois, I don't know how you stop Aaron Shannon.
They played their best basketball in the conference tournament, which is always a dangerous thing to say about a team. The thing that's the stat I saw about Illinois is that they are bottom three in Division I in turnovers forced per game, and that feels like a tough way to live, right? When you're not forcing any turnovers as a defense, and it's all forcing your opponent to miss shots and getting rebounds. I don't know. I've seen a little bit of Morehead State. I know they're also a team that was, you know, real dangerous in conference. But it's so tough to pick a 16 or a 15 or a 14, Jake. I mean, that's spitballing. But we've seen them happen. The 14s are getting better.
Yeah, I don't see a 16 beating a 1 this year. It just doesn't seem in the cards. I mean, you look at the 15s. You know, I don't think South Dakota State's going to beat Iowa State. You know, you look at across the board. St. Peter's isn't sneaking up on anybody this year, and we all know Tennessee's past. I actually think Tennessee makes a run this year. I know a lot of people make fun of Rick Barnes, and he's deserved it. But I think Dalton Connect has been the difference.
Okay, so how about this, Jake? If a 1 or a 2 is bounced from this tournament before the Sweet 16, if a 1 or a 2 is out before Sunday, who is it?
Oh, man, I would say it's hard not to pick Purdue as a one that would be bounced. I'm looking at this TCU team that's one of the most experienced teams in the tournament.
Let me throw a couple at you here. I know some people that think A&M can beat Houston in the round of 32.
Don't think that's crazy.
I know some people who think I am skeptical of either Izzo or Mississippi State beating Carolina.
I don't think they can score enough with them. I mean, and North Carolina, this team's actually physical for North Carolina. They're actually more of a defensive team than we've seen. You know, the one that's kind of fascinating to me, obviously if Kolick doesn't play for Marquette, I don't know if Western Kentucky can defend well enough to be able to stop Cam Jones and some of the guys and Igadaru and some of the other guys that Marquette has. But, you know, a game that's interesting, I know it's not a 2, but I'm looking at this Duke-Vermont game, mm-hmm. right? And look, Vermont, they typically got some big guy that can play outside and inside. Mm-hmm. They really don't have that this year. But, man, it's hard for me to trust Duke, Dan. It really is.
Well, it's the kind of year where for most teams, everybody has some flaws. I mean, there just aren't – there haven't been, wow, there is – you know, there is the best team, or here are the two or three best teams, and they're head and shoulders above everybody else.
No, that's, I mean, this and again, the conference tournaments were wacky, but the regular season was wacky as well. I mean, we talked about it all year. Even this UConn team, who's the defending national champions, and they're really good, I don't think this year's team is as good as last year's team. And I think the parity at the top, I mean, God, how many number one ranked teams did we have? It seemed like every, you know, week it was changing because somebody would get beat.
I want to see what Florida is without Hanlogden, without like having actual time to prepare without Micah Hanlogden, not suddenly lose.
Well, Dan, let me ask you this. Everybody's like counting Florida out like they don't have other trees. Condon is a really good player. Hauk is a really good player. Asante Samuels is 6'10" running at the 4, and he's as athletic as the Olympics. So I tell you what, don't be shocked, especially with Kolick with that oblique injury, if Florida beats Marquette in the second round.
No, that's where I was going with that, Jake, is that Handlogged, I want to see what Florida is without Handlogged, and who was playing a good 10 to 15 minutes over the final 10, 12 games of the season before he got hurt. In the game against Auburn, but it's not as though Florida lost a post who was playing 35 minutes a game and leading them in scoring and rebounding. And it's not. Well, I want to see how they look in the play-in game or against the winner of that play-in game, because I think Boise State is underseeded. I think they're a good.
I think they are too.
I think they're a good team.
They were the last four in is egregious.
I think they're a good team. I think that they I think a healthy Florida team would have probably needed to sweat a game against Boise State. When Boise's playing well, now you take a piece away. The winner of that game, I think the winner of the Boise-Florida game gives Marquette a real run. I really do.
They will. Well, where the hand-locking thing really hurts you the most you know, outside of obviously it's one of your teammates, you hate to see it go down, especially with such a brutal injury, which I'm glad TV didn't show it, because I went back and watched the replay of kind of the way he landed, and it was not good. It wasn't Kevin Ware bad, but it was when you get blood on the court after a broken leg, that's something very, very bad happened. But I will say the two spots that hurt you, one is he was an incredible offensive rebounder. That was what he was best at. He's one of the best offensive rebounders in the country. And two, now you can get in foul trouble a whole hell of a lot quicker than when you had him because you couldn't just rotate guys in. You're not as protected. Those are the two spots where I would be the most concerned.
Talking with Jake Crane from Crane & Company here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive, helping you get ready for your March Madness pool, your bracket. For entertainment purposes only, just a bracket you may be filling out for yourself.
Yeah.
Jake, what's your let's jump to it. What's your if you had to submit, you know, if it was pencils down right now, take us through your Elite Eight, take us through your Final Four, and let us know who you got in the title game.
All right. Well, you know, again,
you can back off.
If it was pencils down right now, they're taking me on the first boat to Shutter Island. And I'll say this: I will not jinx Auburn. I won't do it. If you follow me on social media, every game starting at the NCAA tournament, I tweeted out that the other team we were playing was going to have the best game of their lives, and we played about as well as we could possibly play. So take Auburn out of the equation because I will not be responsible for jinxing this team.
Right. So right now, we can both agree we'll put UConn in the Elite Eight for now in that one. Yes. But I understand you can back off that at any time between now and tip off.
Yes. So my Elite Eight, it's a little bit chalky, right? It's a little bit chalky, but I got UConn and Illinois. So a 1-3 because I think Illinois beats Iowa State.
You think BYU's North Carolina? You think BYU's got a chance against the Illini? I love the way BYU plays. I love the way BYU plays.
I'm going to take the over for entertainment purposes only. I can promise you that. I just believe in Terrence Shannon and Coleman Hawkins and DeMoz. I think DeMoz is one of the best kind of tweeners with his back to the basket. He's a really good player. But I got UConn beating Illinois to go to the Final Four. I got North Carolina beating Arizona, which I have a hard time trusting Arizona. I almost had Nevada beating them. I almost had Nevada beating them. I got Houston beating Kentucky and then Tennessee beating Purdue. And then in the Final Four, I've got Houston beating Tennessee. I've got UConn beating North Carolina. And I've got UConn beating Houston in overtime. That's it right now. But I tell you what, guys, one team, and I led the show off with this today, to really watch out for is New Mexico. They're a problem. They're an absolute problem. The Mountain West is really good. They got six teams in. I've watched a lot of Mountain West ball. The first round matchup they have, I like the way they stack up against Clemson. And then I think there's a really good chance that Nevada, who I think is favored, they could run into them down the road. But I got New Mexico beating Clemson. Then I got New Mexico beating Baylor and knocking them out of the tournament and making it to the Sweet 16. They've got Eddie House's son. They've got Jamal Mashburn's son. They've got one of the Toppins. They've got another tree that can play. And I think Richard Pitino may have knocked his father out of the NCAA tournament. So they've got everything. The storyline. They're number one in the Mountain West in steals, number one in blocks, number one in points scored a game, and number one in turnovers forced. That's a pretty good recipe.
Jake, we gotta let you go because we're running out of time here. I don't believe you've said Alabama this segment. I do want to ask what you think the tournament has in store for the Crimson Tide.
Well, you know, I don't think Charleston can stay in front of the guards. I think Mark Sears and Estrada are going to feast. The question now becomes, you know, is St. Mary's a really bad matchup for Bama with the way they play? They slow it down. They guard you. They've got size. They've lost one game since Christmas. All right, I don't care what league you're playing in. That's pretty impressive. I've got Alabama. I think Sweet 16 is about as far as they're going to go because I don't, you know, eventually if they meet North Carolina down the road, I don't see them beating them. But I think there's a good chance they get bounced in the second.
You know, you can see some points in that Bama-North Carolina game,
You're
too.
You're not kidding.
We get that one in the Sweet 16.
Yep. Hey, Jake, always great. This is such a fun time, and I know you guys have a lot of fun talking about all this and much more. Let everybody know what's coming up on Crane & Company.
Definitely. Well, we've got Cole Kublik tomorrow, talking, you know, college football, college basketball. Then Thursday, we are live streaming the whole first round of the NCAA tournament starting at 11 Central. Just go over to YouTube. It's Crane & Company. We're going to release our final brackets. We want to know about yours. And you can watch the games with us and freak out. So come hang out with us.
Sounds good, man. Thanks a lot, Jake. Have a great week.
All right. Y'all be good.
All right. We need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
It's time to stop.